If you like what we're doing at Star Wars in Character and at NeoZaz.com, we kindly ask that you take just a few minutes to check out our new Patreon page. Patreon is an opportunity to support the show and help us produce more specials, series, and events in the future. Check out patreon.com/NeoZaz to see our milestone goals for the future of the show and the network, and the perks and bonuses offered at our different levels of support. We love creating content at NeoZaz and love doing these shows. We have a lot more we'd like to do, and with this new Patreon page, we look forward to starting those projects very soon. To learn more, visit patreon.com/NeoZaz. That's patreon.com/NeoZaz.
I like him because he's not a opportunity or not a fuck. What's the word? God damn it.
Giraffe.
This is Star Wars in Character, the podcast that takes a closer look at some of the elements that make up the Star Wars universe. Backstories, histories, and details you never knew, wanted to know, or ever need to know. Now here are this week's panelists of Star Wars in Character.
Today, we are talking about Firmus Piet. I never knew his name until I looked it up and I saw Firmus in front of his name, Piet.
Sounds like thermos.
It's
a funny word.
I'm picking out a Firmus for you.
Not just any other Firmus.
The hell is that?
Hey, what is that?
The jerk.
Oh, okay.
Who's the luckiest guy in the world?
I think it's about time for me to watch that movie again. It's been a while.
That's right.
He hates these cans.
That's what I'm crying like. Well, Firmus appears in Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back, and Episode 6, Return of the Jedi.
Hell
yeah. Now, I hate to admit this, and real quick before Chris gets to his names, but there's a segment coming up in the show where that's talked about as well. I cannot for the life of me remember him in Episode 6, so I am going to have to search for some screenshots while you're talking about that.
Well, because I guess you don't... maybe Matt doesn't know. I'm not going to say anything. But
I'm not saying... Yeah, I'm certainly not arguing that he's not in it. I'm just saying I cannot... This is the second time now I've heard this today, and why I can't remember this, I don't know.
Well, I always said this question. Does anyone know out there know how he dies?
Well, I do now because I just found that screenshot.
I believe I know.
And the actual moment that it happens.
I believe I do.
Okay. But these names, in the order that I give them, make sense on what's happening to him when he's dying.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, well, I'm caught up on this part now. I'm glad I brought this up before you get to the names. I'd be totally confused.
I wanted to make sure. Yeah, I wanted to make sure you knew what's going on, and this is what is being said or he's saying. Okay,
is this the only time he appears in it?
I honestly don't. I don't know.
Okay, sorry.
He's
in a lot. He pops up here and there.
He's one of the most prolific Imperial officers.
Well, I think it's time I watch Return of the Jedi again now. Before the jerk.
My name is coming right at us, Chris.
I like the action. You can't see him, but he put his hand up in the air.
Coming right at us, Chris.
Oh, he did it again.
Touchdown.
Today I am joined by Move, Matt.
Oh, and he moved his hand to the side.
Oh.
To my right, Duck Dave.
Oh, I just did.
and too late, Tim.
Oh.
So Tim.
Come right at him. Move, Duck. Too late.
Did they ever say duck? They don't say duck.
I don't think anyone said anything. Oh,
okay.
That is the conversation.
They say too late, I think, don't they?
Yeah, the other guy does.
He goes too late. Yeah.
Speaking of the sports reference I made earlier, I've not acknowledged this, and it's been over a month. Your micro movie review of the Kevin Costner football movie, you kept calling it a baseball movie the whole review.
You know what's weird is that when I hit stop, I think I just called this movie a baseball.
Yeah. I don't know anything about baseball. I just know I love this movie. Well, apparently you don't know shit about baseball because it's a football movie.
I know.
Fantastic basket-based hockey movie. Hockey ball.
Dave.
Yeah.
Give us some facts about Fermis. Yet.
Yet.
Why are you making fun of his name?
Would you name your son Fermis?
Would you name your son Obi-Wan? Well, you would now, but I meant like if you weren't a Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Fermis.
Oh, before we get started, I'd like to hear what you guys think. What are your thoughts on this guy? And I'll say this. He is the only Imperial officer to appear in more than one movie.
Oh, you're right.
So knowing that about him and what you already know about him, what are your thoughts? I went back and listened to the Ozzel episode because he gets mentioned a lot in that for obvious reasons. We did talk about him then, but we tried to not talk too much about him. What do you think right off the bat?
Hayden's first.
I love him in Return of the Jedi. Very memorable.
I like him because he's not a
giraffe.
he's not a giraffe. You know, he's not like overly ambitious. He knows he just keep your head down and do your job, and he does that, and he gets promoted. He doesn't even need to do a whole lot of work. He just needs to not be a dick.
He always looks tired, though. He always has those big, thick eyelids.
Not being a dick takes a lot of energy.
I like that he is thrust into a situation where now all of a sudden, the second he fucks up, he's dead.
Oh, yeah.
Without warning. You know what I mean? It's like you almost have to feel almost empathetic for the guy in a sense. Even though he's one of the bad guys, it's like, shit, this guy is now, you know, he went from standing around waiting for something to happen to the next time he sneezes and doesn't cover his mouth, he's a dead man.
Well, that's interesting that you guys say that because everything you just said is invalid.
Oh. Well, everything that you're about to tell us is invalid unless it was in the movie, but again, that's another story.
Thick eyelids, Dave.
That's your thoughts? He has thick eyelids?
Yeah. That's Steve Carell.
He's the sleepy. Yeah.
We're just trying to picture Steve Carell as Admiral Piet.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Well, he is, I'll tell you, I don't know if you guys are going to be disappointed here as you listen to this.
I never am.
You never are. He's the last admiral of the Imperial Navy's Death Squadron.
Death Squadron?
Okay.
This just got interesting, I think.
Maybe. He hates those cans.
That is what that is what they call Darth Vader's fleet of Star Destroyers. So he's the last admiral to serve because, you know, the shit hits the fan pretty much there at the end, and that's right. It. But he's from the planet Axala. Tim, is this the first character we've heard from that planet?
I was waiting for Chris's customary. God bless you.
I've never heard of this planet. I think this is the first time it's been mentioned.
Okay. I thought so, too.
Axula? Wasn't that that cartoon duck that lived in Transylvania?
I just saw the opening the credits for that the other day.
That's weird. That's weird timing.
They're very morbid cartoon.
If you click on the Axula, it brings you to what looks like someone that's in a workout outfit with a gun strapped to her leg. Like this is like an 80s workout video.
Is that Olivia Newton-Jones?
Yeah, someone wants to get physical in this.
Ooh, now nice. You got my attention.
Is this where he's from, Dave, you say?
Oh, that is such a reach. That's one of your worst. You gotta start the next 25 episodes with that.
This is the extended version, though, man. 8 minutes long.
This does look like she stepped right out of an aerobics, a jazzercise class, aren't fully armed. You're right, Tim.
Like it's from the movie Perfect.
Well, he started on this planet, and
I love when Dave just like ignores everything Tim and I say and he says, well, here's the real story these two idiots aren't listening to.
It has nothing to do with the movie Perfect or staying alive.
Anytime Matt starts talking about Olivia Newton-John, we just have to move on.
Yeah, that's true, because I won't stop.
Because he won't stop. Well, he's from Axala, and he was part of an anti-pirate fleet, and the way that he became famous and got his claim to fame is that his sector, this is a planet like on the outer rim, was the safest and had the least amount of crime or any kind of opposition to the empire. So he became instantly famous because of this in within the empire, and he was promoted to lieutenant. He went from there straight into starting to fiddle his way through the ranks, and he really wanted to become one of the leaders of one of these Star Destroyers. He was very good at his job, but it often was that he at least made it look like he was good at his job. So some of the stuff from here on out is kind of like him kind of like needling his way in. And the thing with Ozzel is the best example of that. And I can skip to there because that's so famous and we've talked about it a lot. And we talked about it on the Ozzel episode, but he knew that Ozzel was kind of like stubborn, and Ozzel that thought he was just as important as Darth Vader on that Star Destroyer. So he found out that, you know, they were sending out these information on these probe droids like seen in the movie. And he waited until Ozzel was kind of arguing with Vader that it meant nothing to sidle in there and give him the information because he knew it would make Ozzel look bad. He waited to tell him until Vader was there. And this
that totally changes my entire interpretation of that character.
This is how he made a name for himself. And he was able to, like, even if things would go wrong, he was able to shift blame to somebody else. Because
I think I work with this guy.
His name is Boss.
Thank God he doesn't listen to this because you're dead on.
He was able to kind of weasel his way in through the ranks and become the man that he was. Now, how does that make you feel?
Sad.
You're betrayed. You're raped.
Oh,
anally raped.
Thank you for clarifying.
You're quite welcome.
Anally raped.
That's the worst kind. It tears you up.
Well, I feel like I was raped in my mouth.
That's not that good to you either, I guess.
We'd say it's not good for your teeth.
Yeah, that's
for your teeth. It's not very good for your teeth to do that, sir.
4 out of 5 dentists agree getting raped in your mouth is not good for your teeth.
Or your complexion.
I don't know about that.
Well, there's going to be a lot of disappointed people on Facebook when they listen to the latest episode of the Gradys. So I'm just catching up on the comments from Chris's last post.
Yeah, why were they?
They are very excited about it.
Woo!
Well, they need to get over it.
That's right.
Now, along the way, like many Star Wars characters do, he had run-ins with the most famous of Star Wars characters, people like Han Solo and...
Oh, was he in his graduation or some shit like that?
No.
Lobot?
At some point when he is on the Executor, there's several...
That's right.
That is said correctly.
That's right.
There are several, more than one at least, encounters with Han Solo. They are able to capture the Millennium Falcon and look through, and it's like they never find anything on the Millennium Falcon, apparently.
Like, it's always underneath. You know?
Yeah, it's like they don't ever think to look anywhere. He personally questioned Solo. They searched everywhere. They couldn't find anything. They wanted to know why he had nothing on board. Solo told him some story about how he had to get rid of stuff on Ord Mandel. Isn't that mentioned in the movie?
Yeah, that's where he ran into a bounty hunter. He talked in Hoth, and he's like, "Oh, that bounty hunter in Ord Mandel is my mine."
Right.
That's pretty good.
And they're taken into custody. Han and Solo are taken into custody, into Imperial custody. This is there's several books that these are from, and there's one that was mentioned called Scoundrel's Luck.
Oh, I've not heard of that. I've heard of Scoundrel's Luck?
Yeah.
So the new one called Scoundrels.
I wonder if this is one of those Han Solo short story books, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know those titles specifically. I'm going to look them up while you're...
Solo, it stars in...
Well, they're taken into custody, and all it says in the backstory is that they are able to escape. It doesn't say how.
No.
So it kind of stalls at that point. But there's another long, bullshitty story.
That is an accurate description.
A Star Wars-y bullshitty of him encountering Luke. I'm skipping over things here because the main idea is that he is climbing the ranks to be put in front in positions of power. While on the Executor, his job before he became Admiral, when he was Captain Piet, was that he personally oversaw the staffing of the ship. And as he did that, he kind of was getting the feel for how Vader interacted with people, and he would observe these things. And that's when he realized that Ozzel's cockiness was going to be the thing that he could do to get him out of there. Doesn't ever say that he wanted him dead, but Vader, even though we don't see it a lot in the movies, had a penchant for choking these guys and killing them. And he had to have known that was going to be the end for this guy, but he didn't care. Like he wanted his job.
I want his job and his pants, and I shall have both.
When you see
His slacks are so perfectly tailored, and my leg is exactly the same length as his. Fortuitous.
I just want to see how long Tim was going to go there.
He could go on forever.
Someone had potatoes.
So I felt the way that you guys felt. Like when you see him, especially when Ozzel's like choking and he's kind of like looking at Ozzel, looking at the screen, he seems uncomfortable about it.
I got that scene.
Yeah.
And oh, good.
I never felt like he was responsible for it.
Yeah, me neither. That's actually, I'm not sure how I feel about that. Not terrible, but
That's the backstory on this, that he's really responsible for his death.
Hold him back the joy. We're about to get a new pair of slacks.
Maybe that's what he's looking down at. He does look down as he's being dragged away. He's probably making sure the slacks are going with him so he knows where to get them later.
M30.
I hope he didn't shoot.
You have failed me for the last time, Admiral.
He's looking down at his slacks, Tim.
Make ready and our troops beyond their energy field and deploy the fleet so that nothing gets off.
Measuring tapes out.
You are in command now, Admiral Piet.
Look, slacks. Slacks.
Slacks.
That's what he's saying. Firmus.
And we talked about that.
Firmus. Oh, Firmus. Firmus. Okay.
Firmus.
We talked about that scene that Chris just played, that Ozzel's hearing the promotion of this guy that he pretty much hates before he even hits the floor.
Yeah.
No! Shit! Cockknocker.
And I know we talked about this in the past too, like about Vader choking someone through Skype.
Yeah.
that's still just really cool shit. I don't know about you guys. I think that's just so cool. He can choke you. Taking a shit, you know what I mean?
He can focus his force fingers across, you know, parsecs
keep going.
And, you know, light years. Going? Okay.
Why couldn't choke like I don't know, Luke or Obi-Wan from a distance?
Yeah, I think he has to have eye contact. I must look at you in the eyes while I choke you.
Like that, okay.
Maybe it can only be used against non-force sensitives.
Well, why couldn't he choke out Han Solo or Chewbacca?
Shut up!
like he wants to find Han Solo. He wants to find the Millennium Falcon in Empire Strikes Back. All he has to do is like, you know, do his little hand and control Han's hand to fly the ship back to his ship through the Force.
That's farther away.
Go choke somebody through Skype because Matt probably would have done it for us a long time.
Yeah. Every time we bring this up, I'm like, fuck, why does that not exist yet?
Google soon.
Yeah.
Google choke.
There's the poke already in Facebook. Now there's the Google choke.
For suck.
Yeah, what the hell is that poke for on Facebook?
Anybody? I've never poked anybody on Facebook.
I've been poked, but I've never poked anyone back because it sounds very juvenile.
What's the point of poking someone on Facebook?
To start a conversation, I guess.
Yeah, it's like a winky winky.
Yeah.
Why not just
it's like
inbox them?
It's supposed to be like, I think you're cute.
Mm-hmm. That's why Tim gets it.
I got one from Tim one time. I got poked.
Yeah. I think you're cute. I like your trousers.
Everything's trousers.
Trousers.
And pantaloons. Mm, yes.
Were you saying something, Dave? I'm sorry. What?
No, I wasn't saying that.
Okay.
What do you think Piet's first act as Admiral was?
Putting on the pants.
One leg at a time.
Something with pants. That's all I know.
No.
Oh.
Somebody make me a sandwich. A Dagwood, please.
He's probably wondering about his pay, if his pay went up or something, you know?
First order of business, to have Ozzel's corpse disposed of.
And how did it? Was it?
No idea.
Son of a bitch.
Rested it to a liqueur so I can drink it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They probably shot him out in a sunglasses case like they did Spock. And
in the, what are they called? Ray-Bans, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, man. Now, all the souls I've met in this universe so vast, his was the most human.
The pants are tight.
Balls.
Now,
it's between the testicles.
I so hope the actor does not listen to this episode.
I'm sorry.
Hermes.
Now, as soon as he becomes Admiral, the men on the ship start putting pools out, like betting on how long.
Oh, that is awesome. I love.
Because that has been happening, even though we don't see it. Like I said, it's been happening on ships all along. And even though Piet knows that's a possibility, he still wants to go for this. So as soon as he becomes Admiral, it's like, how long has he got? And they start.
I bet you that was going on for a while. I bet you.
Yeah, well, it was probably
Ozzel, everyone, you know,
going on with Ozzel. It'd be funny in the back of the Skype thing if you saw two guys.
Just someone hand him some money.
Trading money.
Yeah.
So that's going on with him. And I mean, we talked about the whole reason that Ozzel is choked, not only because he's a dick to Vader, but he came out of hyperspace fast. So they're right there at Hoth. So after the battle is over, the Battle of Hoth, Piet actually goes down to Echo Base and tours what's left of it.
It's pretty cool.
I love those little like behind the scenes thing. It doesn't mean anything.
It's behind the scenes that makes sense a little bit.
Yeah, because they're very. That would have to happen in a real life situation. You'd have to go, clean up and probably even from a mic tech standpoint to go in and pull all the computers to see if you can grab any data and shit. That would have to really happen. So I like that stuff too.
I think he went down to show up his pants.
That too. He's strutting his pants. Look at my pants. Just waiting for Dave to go. So anyway.
I thought this was interesting. Yeah, look, you see those transports going out and Mark Hamill on the recording going,
it's
the first
away. Transport is away.
So you see them getting out. It never dawned on me that they didn't all make it.
Oh, me neither.
And they have the stats in here of how many ships have been destroyed while trying to flee. Now, I think those big ships all made it for the most part, but there are other people that are trying to get out. 17 ships are shot down while trying to flee the base.
How many people in the ships?
I don't know. I don't think it's those big cruisers necessarily, but like maybe.
They hold all the figures?
Yeah. But I they always kind of make it seem like there's some guys get shot down, you know, in the battle. But when that battle's over, I was kind of assumed that like everybody else got out too, but they did.
1% fatality rate.
Like they like these little tidbits like that.
Yeah.
The next part of in the movie is when you see that Vader's all he cares about is Vader doesn't even care about Echo Base. He just wants to get Leia and Luke and get his family ties taken care of. So he is
that we've been together for a million years.
Sorry. Oh. I'm just waiting for someone to continue it.
La-la-la-la.
We're sitting.
Hey, good dog.
So they're chasing them into the asteroid field and Piet wants to let him know that this is probably not a good idea. And that's when he sees the Emperor is giving this transmission that the Emperor wants the ship moved out of the asteroid field. And Piet goes in to see Vader. And he's only one of a handful of people that ever sees him without his mask on.
Yeah. He's like, ooh.
When the first time you saw that, man?
Oh, yeah.
Bikinis.
Yeah.
That was a big deal when we were little.
That was huge. That was.
Because it was letting you in on the mystery.
Yeah. It was.
Just- it lets you know that he was, A, not a robot.
Right.
Yeah.
And B, he was fucked up.
Now you kind of see him from the back, right? And there's like some scarring and whatnot. When they went back on episode 3 and they had Hayden Christensen scarred, did they try and match those?
I don't think not too well, at least.
I think they tried to match the Return of the Jedi, the face one, more so, because I know like on the top of the head there's like a like the Grand Canyon going from front to back, but that you don't really see the back of Vader's head too much in Return of the Jedi. I think you only see it in that one.
This is
first to say you don't see the back of Hayden's head,
right?
Very much.
And then shortly after that you get the bounty hunter scene, and Piet is the one that's disgusted by them. And I was kind of thinking about, they don't necessarily give a whole lot of reason why, but so why do you think he is so against the bounty hunters being there? I mean, I have a reason that I come up with just from reading this thing. Do you have any thoughts on that? Like, because there's...
I have the smell.
The toes?
I think he's got imperial pride.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think he thinks that there's not anything these guys can do better than the Empire can't do for themselves.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking too. Like,
we are the universe. We don't need this.
He wanted to accomplish this job. Felt that the Imperial Navy could do it, and this was kind of like outsourcing almost. And he was insulted by it.
Right.
Vader didn't care. Flash forward to them reaching Cloud City. The Empire gets there. Piet is actually the guy that sends the team to sabotage the Falcon's hyperdrive.
Yeah.
So later when it doesn't work, that's because he ordered it to be taken out.
Good man.
Now later when they actually do make the jump to hyperspace, that's the last time you see when Empire Strikes Back. He looks like he is ready to die right there.
And that might be why I think I don't remember him from Jedi off the top of my head, because I think I just assumed he died off camera
right
at that point.
Well, the idea that you get from reading some of the backstory, I don't want to get too far into it because we're going to have a special treat here, was that people liked him enough that there was a letter writing campaign. This was pre-email and stuff, but that they wanted to see him back.
Wow. I wonder why. I mean, not that I'm not saying I disagree, but I wonder why so many people would have done that. Because that takes effort. Online takes 30 seconds to write a letter.
Letter writing campaign.
Yeah. From what you read, that was the idea, that he really didn't have a reason. They weren't going to have him in Return of the Jedi, but because people were like, we like this guy. We like the way he played the character. He had some humanity. And that's the way the actor said, like, he put some humanity into it. He maybe did a little more with it than some of these other guys did. People responded to it and he got himself in the next movie.
Now going back to where I thought he had died, doesn't he say something about like he to whoever's with him that he was going to go inform Lord Vader himself of what just happened?
That's a different guy.
Oh, okay, never mind. Damn it. Because I'm trying to think why I thought he was just a dead man walking at that point.
That's Captain Nita.
Okay.
Who we'll probably do an episode on at some point, but he feels like he has to personally apologize.
And he does. And now I remember the scene because he says apology accepted as he's writhing on the floor. Okay.
They're dragging his body.
I wonder if I get the two confused, because that's very easy for me to do. I wonder if I've confused him all these years and that's why I don't remember anything we're talking about. Who are you guys? What's going on?
Where am I?
So you flash forward then to the Battle of Endor. He's kind of, after the debacle of whatever happens on Cloud City, he's kind of transferred back and forth. And at that point, he's kind of happy about it, because even though he's been trying to rise in the ranks, I think he realizes how much danger he really is in doing that. And I think it kind of hits him finally. But he is, months after the debacle, put in charge again on the executor. And the main job then is to find the Rebel Alliance, trap them, and defend the new Death Star. And it's the events that happen in Return of the Jedi, actually, because of what two of his superiors do and their personal kind of pet projects that kind of doom him. He's screwed by a couple of people.
So he's kind of getting a taste of his own medicine or his past medicine.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, you're right. The people that he's screwed by are actually Vader and the Emperor.
Oh. That was not what I was expecting you to say.
This way, that the Emperor, he actually is in the right position when they come out and the bunker has not yet been taken down and the shield is there. He's ready to defeat the Alliance right there and then. But because the Emperor wants them to wait so he can make a big show of shooting off the laser, they have to sit and wait. And he's kind of sitting there waiting. And while they're doing it, the bunker's getting down. And Lando starts picking people off and getting a foothold on the battle. So because the Emperor is waiting to shoot off his weapon, he's screwed.
Oh.
Son of a bitch.
Now I'm sad again.
You will. He's actually, I did his age. He's about 43. The character's about 43 when he dies. Do you remember the name of the pilot that kills?
I got real nervous there. I'm like, that's not very old anymore.
You know what? I saw this today on Facebook. Someone had just got an autograph from this person.
I saw that too, yeah.
Shoot. Arvel
Critic. You beat me to it, Chris.
I like popcorn.
The other thing that, I mean, this is a combination of Admiral Akbar's, I guess, genius. I mean, the way they talk about him in these backstories, he's a battle commander of no equal. And from what Lando's able to do, and we kind of talked about this before, like all they have to do is shoot out that one of those big Epcot balls on top of the Star Destroyer, and it takes out their deflector shields.
It's a trap!
So this printed guy starts, you know, he's hitting, he's out of control. And I never thought about this either. It was just kind of cool. That ship is flying at the executor the way it is, because at that point it's stuck in the executor's gravity.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah, I would have thought that too, but I never thought about those things being... Pull. Yeah, that those things are so big that they have a gravity
field. It's so big you can't pull out.
I'll give you that one.
Thank you.
That got a...
Tim can relate.
Now you just made it funny.
Just keep pushing.
My penises.
And that's where he dies, right there and then on the bridge. And Chris used the quotes at the beginning of the show.
Damn good quotes. I said so myself.
Yeah.
I did say it myself.
You did. That's true.
But that's about it. The backstory behind the actor, you have a special little treat here.
We do.
We don't usually do this kind of thing, but we were lucky enough to have a friend that hooked us up with something. So I don't know. Mac, do you want to kind of describe what people are about to hear?
Yeah, our listener in England named Eric Moore, who's actually been a very long-time listener and Art Moore Project participant again this year, he had a working history with the actor, Kenneth, was it again? Kenneth Collier?
Collier.
Kenneth Collier. Is that right? Because I remember him leading up to this. It's just the details escape me. Does that sound right, that he had worked with him in the past, I think?
Yeah, he said that Mr. Collier was his boss at one
point. Okay. So I am remembering at least that they had worked together. Well, he had gone to see him for a day, and he had asked him before heading out, he told him about the show, told him, you know, what the show was about, and asked if he would be a participant in an interview for the show, and he agreed. And Eric had taken a portable recorder and recorded a very, very good interview, which that's what we're going to play right now. So here is Eric's interview with Admiral Captain / Admiral Piet. Is that what his promotion was? That
yeah.
Okay, because so, I know he had two positions. I couldn't remember the first one.
With yeah, he's captain, and he's promoted when Ozzel dies and dies as an admiral.
Okay, yeah. So Captain / Admiral Piet, Kenneth Colley.
Hello, this is Eric Moore, and welcome to a special Star Wars in Character interview with Ken Colley, who, if you've been listening to this podcast for any amount of time, you know that he played Captain and then Admiral Piet in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Hello, Ken.
Hi.
Right, I guess we better start at the beginning. Okay, how did you get the role of then Captain Piet?
I was a casting director. Irene Lam was casting it and asked me to meet the director in London, a wonderful New York, and a great photographer. He's world class, or was. And he just said, I'm looking for someone who'd frighten Hitler, and I think you're it.
So, and it was as simple as that?
That was as simple as that.
Had they seen any of your work? Because prior to doing Empire Strikes Back, you'd done a lot of TV work, and there was...
No, he relied entirely on the casting director. Being American, he wouldn't see much of my TV work anyway.
Right, okay. When you got the role, Star Wars had been out for a couple of years, and, you know, it had become this huge, massive blockbuster film. Were you at all apprehensive about going into such a big budget film?
No, I was not apprehensive. It was also strange. I had never done a special effects movie. And if you think back, there wasn't the CGI around then that there is now. The things in Star Wars in those early movies, when you see them, they were actually there. Whether they were as big as a mouse or as big as an elephant, they were on set being men inside them or electronically.
Well, that's the appeal of them, because now you look back at them and they haven't dated, because the effects were, as you say, physically there. Yeah. But if you look at, say, the prequel Star Wars films, the CGI, you give that another 10, 15 years or something, and they're going to start looking like bad video games, aren't they? Because CGI dates very, very badly. Ray Harryhausen's work, that does look dated, but there's a charm to it. But there's a coldness, I think, to CGI. Whereas if you physically have props that... on set with the actors. Yes. The actor can't act with anything if that creature isn't in front of them. You know, if it's just a green ball on a pole and they've got to act to that.
There was a bit of that. There was a bit of blue screen.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the things were there.
Mm, right.
On set, working or being rehearsed to work.
I've got a question from Dave. Dave's one of the guys from Star Wars in Character. He asks, how isolated were the Star Destroyer bridge scenes when you were filming them, and did you get to see filming on any of the other sets?
Well, most of it, as I remember, was on board Darth Vader's ship for his admirals and captains. Although, in order to go to lunch, you would pass through the other sets. I passed through the Swamp Planet.
Right.
For instance, on my way to lunch.
And were you allowed to go onto that set, even though you were an actor, it wasn't a case of, no, that's nothing to do with you, move on?
It was all, the sets were all within the same great big studio, and you had to walk through them to get to your particular set.
Right.
It's just that you didn't work on them because the characters did not appear in those scenes.
Right. Another question from Dave. He said... Who exactly directed your scenes? You know, it was Irving Kirshner.
Irving Kirshner is the first one I met who cast me.
Right. And did he actually direct your scenes, or was George Lucas involved in them?
No, George was around but didn't direct. Irving Kirshner was director.
Right. And was that the same on Return of the Jedi? Was it Richard Marquand that was doing the scenes?
Yeah.
Right. So did you see much of George Lucas?
I had to meet George because originally, as written, Admiral Piet did not appear in Jedi, but when my first one went out, there was an enormous reaction, apparently, from the fans who wanted to know more about this character, Piet. So George asked me to go to the studio, and he said, I'll write you some scenes. I have no idea what they're going to be. And we sat down at the base of Jabba the Hutt, it was. They were rehearsing making Jabba the Hutt's expressions.
Right.
And we sat down at the base of Jabba the Hutt. He wrote my first Jedi scene and gave it to me. He said, there you are, Ken. Another one next week, but I've no idea what it's going to be.
Right, right.
So I learnt that scene and shot it, and then I turned up the following week for another scene. So I was handed to the second director.
And how did you feel then and now that it was the fan reaction that actually prompted you to go back?
My luck, wasn't it? I mean, this is America, you see. The power of the fan in America is so... Well, I said at a convention, the only thing more powerful than the Force is the fan.
Sure.
Because without the fan, there is no Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
There wouldn't be. It's the fans who made it and kept it going.
And I can totally agree with that, because I am a fan. And, you know, Empire Strikes Back, I used to watch that again and again. That came out in 81. It was the same year that I became a projectionist. And that was one of the first films I ever showed. And it's like, I'm being paid to watch this film over and over again. And I can see where the fans are coming from, because Piet in Empire Strikes Back, that's a great bit of acting from you, you know?
I did the job.
But I just thought some of the nuances that you gave, you don't really expect to see in such a big blockbuster film. I was watching it yesterday, okay, to get me ready for today. And there's a scene where you come across to Vader to tell him that the Emperor wants to get in contact. And just your body language as you walk down that corridor to him, you look terrified as you come up. And there's a shortness of breath as you say, Lord Vader, the Emperor demands, blah, blah, blah. You know, terrific. Absolutely terrific. And at the end of the film, when they've escaped and Vader's there looking out the window, it cuts back to you. And again, you're acting, you know, you again are terrified because you think he's going to come around and, you know, just slaughter you.
Because I've seen what he did to the bloke I replaced.
Absolutely. And that was my third one. There are three moments in Empire that I thought you were terrific in. And there's not much humour in the Star Wars films, but when Admiral Ozzel gets choked to death and he drops down, just before it cuts away, there's a long shot and you're there. You've just been promoted to Admiral and you're there and it's a long shot and you look off camera to just go, can you get rid of this? Your predecessor is on the floor. And I always thought that was hilarious, that little gesture that you've got of, can you help me out here?
I just played a man doing a job. You can't play a myth. The audience creates the myth.
Well,
and that's how it should be.
Yeah, I mean, we're back to fans as well, and the expanded universe, as you know, is now a massive, massive part of Star Wars. And they do. They see the germ of a character, or they see a segment of a character, and then they will build outwards from that and extrapolate from what they've seen. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Getting back to that promotion scene when you're Ozzel, poor old Ozzel there, he's choked to death for failing Vader. And you're promoted to Admiral. How many takes, oh, this is from Dave, by the way. How many takes did Michael Sheard have to do the choking to death? Do you recall? Was it one take?
It didn't take much at all. I mean, maybe two or three.
Right, because Dave was
most
wondering.
Most retakes in Star Wars were not to do with an actor, but because what was so exciting about being on the set, it was almost like being in Leonardo da Vinci's studio, because they were stepping out. They were doing things that had never been done before. They were experimenting. Well, that meant that the little things didn't always work on cue in the scene, and you had to do retakes.
Right.
So the most retakes were not for actors at all. They were for gizmos. For instance, my first morning's work, I had to make a report to Darth Vader. And he shot my feet walking along, mm-hmm. and then brought the camera up to identify me walking along, but a little mouse-like thing was supposed to cross my path, about this big,
right.
A little electronic thing. Well, in the end, I did 17 takes of that piece of dialogue to David.
Just to
Darth
get
Vader.
Just to get the...
Because we were working out the camera movement, my movement, and this little electronic thing that I came to hate. Because when you've said that dialogue 10 times, you no longer know whether you're saying it backwards.
Yeah, sure.
Or forwards. And we did 17. It wasn't only because of that, but the bulk of them was this little thing, which on the screen probably lasts 2 seconds.
Gotcha.
But that was the immense amount of trouble they went to perfect shots, which is why Empire Strikes Back was called by Pauline Kael, who was the leading American film critic. And she said, this is the most beautiful film of the year. And it was.
Mm.
It's perfect. By a great photographer.
Yes, sure.
Erwin.
Getting back to Ozzel, Michael Shedd is a great favourite on the show, and the guys are big fans of him. Was he a nice guy?
We Michael, all yeah, nice as possible. It's a funny thing in the movies, the villains are always the nicest ones in reality. He's unfortunately now dead.
I know. But, a great guy. You say about, you know, you have the, sometimes you would have to do take after take after take. But was it a relaxed set? I mean, the actual shooting, I mean, were the stakes very high and therefore there was a tension, or were you allowed to get on with it? Were you allowed to take liberties?
Well, I don't know about tension because of fear. By then, the whole thing was riding on the absolutely phenomenal success of Star Wars. And George, therefore, I think, had as much money as he needed, whereas on the first one he didn't. Mm. So there was no problem with that. There was none of that tension, we've only got a couple of takes because we can't afford any more, like with British films.
Yeah, sure.
If it took 20, it took 20.
But that didn't equate to a pressure that we've got to do this right. We can't mess up. Because a lot is
no, because he could relax. He knew he had the money and the worldwide attention mm-hmm. now for this movie.
Right.
I mean, he said to me when we were sat down and he was writing these scenes, we were chatting. He said, "I am not going to make any more Star Wars movies after these three." I said, "Why? You've created a phenomenon." He said, "Ken, listen, from 6 o'clock in the morning till midnight, my fax machine, my phone, my front door is going with people wanting to put money into Star Wars. I can't live. I can't do anything."
I guess that explains why there was such a massive break between those three and him returning to it, yeah. You know, for the prequels. He had to have a rest.
The phenomenon. I mean, what was it? Gene Roddenberry went up to George and said, "You've given the 20th century its myth. And also, you made it possible for Star Trek to become a movie and leave television."
Yeah, sure.
And he did. Each century has its myths attached to it. George gave the 20th one of its myths.
And those characters are just iconic now. Everybody knows who they are.
Yes.
You know, you go to a convention or whatever, you know, and you've got very, very small children from there upwards.
But it's the same with the adults who were children when it first
yes.
came out.
Yeah, sure.
I remember I was at Heathrow Airport actually going to fly out to LA, and somebody had left a newspaper, a daily newspaper, on the table I was at, and it was open. And it was open at the page where the political cartoon took up about a third of the page. Mm-hmm. And the political cartoon was the Queen of England was knighting somebody with a lightsaber.
That just shows how it soaked into the culture, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it went everywhere.
And it is everywhere now. Okay, when you came back to Jedi, as we've said, a different director, and seeing how massive Empire had been received and built on the first one. Were there any changes then on Return of the Jedi on the way it was made, and did you change your approach?
No, the feeling on set by then was great. It was like a family. Everybody welcomed you. Mm-hmm. In fact, I remember walking on And I don't know how many people all raised their arms at me and shouted, "Hello, Ken." But since they were all tentacles with things coming up because they were wearing this, I had no idea who it was. But the crew were the same. Because the crew knew, we're now riding the world's winner.
Yeah.
They did. There was nothing to touch it.
And you were like a family, I guess.
Yeah, and it was a family thing. It really was.
Excellent. Question from Dave again. He said, "You're the only officer to appear in two of the Star Wars films. How does it feel to know the fans wanted you back for Jedi?" I think we touched on this before.
Well, I was as shocked by that, I think, as George was about the success of Star Wars. I was in the middle of a kind of... It was like falling down the stairs but keeping your feet.
Yeah, sure. Because, of course, before Star Wars, science fiction wasn't really well thought of.
No, it was laughed off the screen because so many of them were so atrocious and pathetic.
Exactly.
And amateur, except for the great Kubrick's 2001.
Yes.
And a very forward-looking movie, which I saw as a teenager,
made by
George Pal, called Rocket to the Moon.
Oh, Rocket to the Moon,
which
yeah,
was
sure.
really about what they thought it was going to be like yes. to send men to the moon.
That's still a great film now. You look at it now and a lot of it's wrong. But
because it was trying to predict.
Yeah, but that's still a good film.
I saw it last year.
Oh, really?
It was on TV.
Right, right. But, like I say, they were few that you would have intelligent, thoughtful science fiction films. Planet of the Apes was successful. That's a rare one. Silent Running was a very good film, but it didn't do much. You didn't have blockbuster science fiction films. This was the very first. And as you say, when they made it, it was a real gamble. It was
also, you didn't have woven throughout the tapestry, you didn't have strains of great romance. Mm-hmm. That's what separates the first three from the others.
Mm.
Old-fashioned romance and myth.
Yeah.
It was mixed in with the Arthurian legend, wasn't it?
And magic. Oh, sure, yeah.
And Tristan and Isolde, and the Viking sagas, and so on. It was all mixed in, and that's what gave it that wonderful texture.
Mm.
Plus, they simply looked astonishing.
Yeah, absolutely right.
And the acting was good from the principals, because they took it, if you like, seriously. They didn't take it, this is a crappy science fiction film, it's
take
about myth.
No,
they didn't. They committed as with to it. You see Harrison Ford and his performance, and Alec Guinness, and then the young bloke,
Mark Hamill,
they're great in it.
They're giving their all, aren't they?
Well, they're treating it like a proper movie.
Mm.
And that's part of the clue.
Yeah, sure.
So the fans had a lot to identify with. Instead of just being astonished visually, they could identify in the old-fashioned way with the characters in the
gotcha.
Movie.
And they were associating or recognising, as you say, myths and legends dressed up in a modern way, but they're still responding to things that, you know, people have been
old things.
Responding to for 1,000 years or more.
Right and wrong.
Yeah, sure.
Good and evil.
Question from Dave. What's the weirdest thing a fan has ever done?
The weirdest thing mm-hmm. that we've ever done?
Apart from us having a conversation today.
Well, you meet fans at the conventions, and for them, the characters are alive.
So you're not Ken Colley, you are Admiral Piett.
Yeah, if you go back before then, you think a film about Robin Hood or Ivanhoe mm-hmm. or somebody, they might enjoy the movie, but they didn't believe that Robin Hood, Ivanhoe was alive.
Mm, yeah, sure.
They needed to believe that these characters were alive and that Star Wars was real.
Mm.
That's a general thing. That's not just an individual fan.
Right.
That's a general thing. That's the grip. It got on them.
Mm. Again, that's the appeal of it, and it just shows you how, you know.
Well, you probably, if you were a sociologist or something, you could write an essay on, it's attached to the decline of religion,
mm.
and something has to replace it.
Yes.
And that partly did. Something like that.
These days, I mean, you've appeared in many, many things. You know, Star Wars, we're talking about today, Monty Python's Life of Brian. You've been in Casualty, EastEnders, Firefox. I Hired a Contract Killer.
7-10 Russell movies, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What would you say you're most recognised for? Is it still for Piet?
Probably, yes.
Right.
Yeah, because I think of anything that I've been attached to, Star Wars simply has the biggest impact. It's on another scale.
Mm.
Because in the history of film, there have been films which have become phenomenal. Go back to the famous one with Clark Gable in The Burning of Atlanta.
Right.
But none of them did what Star Wars did.
No, no. And do you regularly get recognised, you know, when you're out on the street?
Yeah. It happened on the train again. Charing Cross the other week.
You've got to stop keep going by train.
But it was by the adult, not the kids.
Right.
But, of course, who was a kid at the time.
Well, when I met you, you know, to my shame, I didn't spot you. My wife had spotted you. I was busy with our youngest. You know, she was only like one at the time. And I was dealing with her. And she knows you very well from I Hired a Contract Killer. It's one of her favourite films.
But she, one of mine.
And it is a great film. And she's not a big Star Wars fan, but she recognised you from that in Star Wars. And we were sat on the train, and all of a sudden she goes to me, "That guy's in Star Wars, isn't he, over there?" And it's like, "Oh, that's Ken Colley." She's like, No. Don't go and talk to him. Don't go and talk to him. Because I've got a track record of being embarrassing, you know, just...
It's not embarrassing. No actor ever minds being recognised for their work at all.
But it was great because, you know, when me and Alice and Samuel went across and we were talking to you, we were having a conversation, and I don't think we had used the words Star Wars. We were having a conversation. And it wasn't until about halfway through, Samuel, who was only 7 at the time, you kind of saw the light bulb go on above his head, and he's like, you're Admiral Piet. Like, this is from a 7-year-old, and it was so sweet.
Yeah, that's the division. The adults know that they know you and that you were in it, but the kids know exactly what you played.
Yeah.
And some of them can quote all your dialogue, which I've forgotten. I couldn't recall my dialogue. They can tell you because they're watching it all the time on the loop.
Yeah. And of course, you've returned, haven't you, to the role of Piet for the Lego.
Yes, thing, I did.
How was that?
Well, I've never seen, that's not been on here. I did some sound recording.
Right.
Fascinating.
Was that odd to go back and actually be Piet again?
Yeah. It was, well, as I was doing it, I was trying to visualize what this is like as Lego. I couldn't.
And do you like the fella? Do you like Piet?
Yeah, you have to play your character from his point of view.
Right.
Otherwise, you're doing what's called commenting, which is bad acting.
Yeah, because a lot of people, you know, in the EU for Piet, they see what happens and how you're promoted. And they will see that as that's Piet being sly and underhand. You know, he basically, you know, dropped Ozzel in it. So he would get promotion. But I don't see that at all. All you did was state the obvious. Then that went out of your hands. I don't think that he was, you know, planning to stab him in the back.
No, I didn't think that at all at the time. I didn't see that in the script. I just thought, survive and obey this man.
Yeah, that's the way I took it. But the expanded universe for Piet has it that he got to the captain role by doing that throughout his career.
Oh, listen, the fans sent me a fanzine, as they call it, with a backstory of Piet and then a forward story of Piet. And Piet ended up being in court because he was gay, in one version.
Okay.
I don't quite know what led to that or what the thinking was.
Yeah, that's quite a bit of extrapolation, that is. Yes.
That they and they thought all sorts of things were going on in his head, which I never did. But that's what happens. You have to let go of your baby and it grows into what they make of it.
Yes, yeah. They put whatever they want onto what you started.
Like Hamlet.
Yeah, indeed.
Do the same with Hamlet.
I've got a question from Matt. What are you the most proudest of, appearing in Star Wars films or a Monty Python film?
Oh, that's a hard call. I only had a tiny bit in Monty Python, but they were such a joy. I was a fan of them anyway, you see, already. So it was an extraordinary thing to be asked to join them, and there was such a joy to work with. One was such a great joy. Actually, doing Star Wars in the beginning was a bit of a trial, but Star Wars, of course, had the huge effect.
Yeah, sure.
So in their differing ways, they're both great.
Okay. I've got one more question for you, and then I think we're done. And this comes from Dave again. You're from Manchester originally. Yeah. United or City?
I don't follow football. But my dad did, and his team was City.
Right.
So I better say City.
I think Dave's a fan as well, so great answer.
So that was it. That was the interview that Eric had sent to us. I thought it was very good. I enjoyed it. This is the second time I've got to hear it now.
Yes. It was awesome.
Amazing. I want his job.
Eric's a good dude, and Ken seems Chris and I've met Ken a couple times. I know that, but I can't. It's been a long time. Because Ken has been out on the convention circuit for a long time, so it's been a really long time. It's probably been at least 12 or 13 years since we've stood in front of his table to get an autograph. So, but Ken seems like a really cool dude.
He was one of our
based on this interview.
Really, one of your first ones.
He popped our poster's cherry.
he was so early on. I think I would say we got him. I would say in 98 or 99, or so early on in our autograph collecting. And he's been around quite a while on the competitive circuit, so he's a good dude.
Well, certainly thanks to him for taking the time, and thanks to Eric for not only doing that, but he like I as you've heard, I mean, that was his recording, so he did all the took the time to test out the recorder, even contacted me to make sure he sent me some sample files to make sure there's something we could work with. So thank you, Eric, for all the effort you put into that as well. It came out fantastic. And I think I speak for all of us. I say, I really appreciate you adding something to our show that we otherwise wouldn't be able to have without your help. So thank you for that.
And we'll just say this, if anybody out there has access to people involved with Star Wars and you want to do an interview like Eric did, we would be more than happy to play the interview. Even if it's a character we've already done in the past, we can always work something out to put more interviews on. Keep them coming.
Yep.
Very cool. And he said, like, part of that too was he was going to talk to him at the convention, but something happened and then he ended up going to his home.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It ended up being better. Yeah. Yeah. Because they had, they did want to meet up regardless of it being the convention. So he asked him, I'm filling in the gaps here. I'm sure he asked him if it was okay to do it in his home, which it obviously was because he did the recording. So yeah, worked out, seemed to work out great for everyone. And we all got to hear this. So thanks again.
Yes,
I think they're in a fight club together.
They don't talk about it.
They didn't talk about it, but I think that's what was going on there.
The first rule of fight club.
Don't drop bombs on me.
Wait. Don't drop bombs on me. There's one other thing I forgot to say when I was talking about how he got screwed over by both the Emperor and Vader. I only mentioned how he got screwed over by the Emperor. The way he got screwed over by Vader is actually seen in the movie when that shuttle Tidarium has been stolen and they're trying to get to the moon. Piet is there and he knows there's something going on with the code. It's an older code, but I was going to let him go through. Right. Vader's there. At that point, Vader knows.
Ah.
He knows that Luke and all those Johns are on that thing.
You can smell them.
Smell them. That's awesome.
He lets it happen anyway. Like if things would have went the way they should have, they could have arrested them there. They could have blown that shit up. Yeah. And Piet would have, you know, not ended up dying, at least then. But because this was Vader's pet project, he let him go.
What an asshole.
Vader.
Never liked him.
Never liked him.
Worst character.
Burnt bastard.
BB. But, some of the little things in there were cool about him. Most of what he sees, though, is in the movie. And Mr. Colley does a great job, and that's why he's the only guy in two movies. So congratulations to him on that and on his career.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Awesome. Awesome.
Awesome. Awesome.
Awesome. Matt, is the website Eric Moore?
For the website, since we got a lot of bonus material in this with that interview, for sure, I wanted to give Eric a plug. He has a Facebook page where he does, not only was he kind enough to do this interview for us, but he's also a fantastic model maker, and not just kit models, which he has done, but he makes some of his models from complete scratch. Right off the top of my head, that isn't a costume, because he also does costumes, was the, remember the Jawa gun he had made and posted progress pictures on our Facebook page?
Yeah.
I mean, he does all kinds of incredible stuff. So he has a Facebook page for his models, and it's called Mr. E Models. And it's, if you're interested in that stuff at all, I suggest that you give it a like, so so some of this, the progress of some of this incredible work he does, shows up in your feed. So I want to plug that page for Eric, and thanks for that, not only for the interview, but the all the support he's given the show over these years as well.
He did that Grindin.
Yeah.
While ago. That's simply amazing.
Yeah. He makes costumes for his kids.
Yeah.
And they look great. His Artmore project was one of the most amazing ones.
I agree.
It was fantastic. So he's a good guy to have on our side.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's been there since almost the beginning. I seem to remember, like, in our first 10 episodes, just seeing him pop up on the Facebook page. So he's been there a long time.
Someone on the show is going to see him pretty soon.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be treaded out to London in, what is it now? About 3 or 4 months from the airing of this episode. So we certainly have plans to meet up for a pint, which will probably end up a day of drinking, which I'm always for, no matter what continent I'm on.
Right. Chris, you're yawning.
I know.
It's late.
I'm so tired.
It's almost 2 a.m.
It's 2 a.m. And we are starting a new round of trivia because I won the last round, right?
Bullshit.
All right. Who won the last round?
You know who won.
That was me. I'm the winner, reigning champion, Tim.
Bill Cosby?
You know her.
Sound like Bill Cosby.
Yeah. I'm the winner of the trivia.
Rudy.
Just to put him up.
I'm way too tired to be doing those impressions.
So what are we calling, Dave, this new round of trivia?
You should kick that over to your current champion, because he came up with a very nice
Tim name. Tell us how to cheat this time around. Go.
Well, we used to play Imperial Pursuit, and we decided to, since that was our most successful and most talked about round of trivia, we decided to call this. What do we call it? Imperial Pursuit Strikes Back.
Yes. As soon as you said that, I was like, he forgets what it's called.
He forgets.
Yeah.
I was like talking too long. I'm like, oh, I'm just flapping my gums. Shit, I forgot what we were going to call it. Imperial Pursuit Strikes Back.
Yes. I was telling the guys, I was listening to some older episodes. I don't even often do that. I was like, I wonder what some of those old ones are. And the most entertaining round of trivia that we had was Imperial Pursuit, where we got a category of a trivia question. We bet 0 to 5 points.
Yeah.
On that category before hearing the question, based on how strongly you felt about it, and got the points. And we've had other people tell us that was their favorite. And didn't we, when we had the call-in show, someone did the Jimmy Stewart?
Yes.
You remember that? That's right, yeah.
And talked about how they missed the Imperial Pursuit. So even Jimmy Stewart likes it.
All I know is that Rich the Pretzel Guy fucked me over in that one.
But this one goes out to Rich because this has nothing to do with what we're doing now. We went to the zoo. I took a photo of the Philly pretzels, whatever it's called. And I forgot he didn't work for that one.
Oh, jeez.
He worked for the other pretzel place.
Pretzel.
A pretzel factory. Yes, a Super Pretzel.
Oops.
He called me a traitor, and I felt so bad.
Okay.
I apologize for that. had to get it out there.
Do you feel
this
better
whole
now?
Time was on my chest.
Yeah, you had forgotten all about it.
Yeah, it was on my chest for the last 5 episodes we recorded.
All right, so this is how it's going to go. We're going to go in order: Tim, Matt, Chris, Dave. You're going to get a category, and you can bet 0 to 5 points based on your confidence in yourself.
Ah, I was like, where's the rest?
That's all it is.
That was just...
Oh, good.
Just, that sounded
bad. Babaloo!
Babaloo, babaloo, babaloo. Okay. Tim.
Current affair.
Tim, your category is the Rebel Alliance.
Oh, that is pretty big.
Now, if I get it wrong, do I lose the points?
Oh. Yes.
Oh, so we can slip it in the negative. Oh, we can. That's right.
Remember, yeah.
I remember that now.
I am bidding 0 the whole time, and I win.
I am just going to go 2 because I'll start slow.
Chris, okay. That's not the worst strategy you've ever had.
For 2 points, here's your question.
I'm not afraid.
What pilot did Luke address his, quote, "I've been hit" transmission to before crash landing on Hoth?
Just hang on!
When Luke says, "I've been hit," who is he addressing that transmission to?
I believe he's addressing that to Mr. Wedge Antilles.
Is that your final answer?
That is my final answer.
The betting 0 and staying at 0 would keep you ahead of Tim because he is at -2.
Oh!
As the answer is Hobby.
Zero. Maybe I'll make 0 the hot my sponsor.
Yes. Hello there.
Hello there.
Hello there. He just walked in.
Mama.
Off to a bad start.
Yep. I got a bad feeling about this.
2 was a bad choice.
Matt, are you ready?
I am ready.
Your category is ships.
Ah, ships.
That's pretty good, Matt.
I will go with 3.
Okay.
3.
For 3.
That was 2.
Babaloo after everything. For 3 points.
Ooh, what is it going to be?
Which eye does an X-Wing pilot use to sight through to use his targeting computer?
It's one eye. Of the eye.
It's one eye.
It's one eye.
What eye?
Oh, man.
X-Wing.
I must have seen the targeting computer be switched off 100 times in my life. What fucking side was it? I think. I'm going to go with the right side.
That's your final answer.
That's my final answer.
Chris, your strategy isn't bad. It is the left eye.
Shit.
Did we also say they will only answer 1 question and the winner is announced tonight?
Oh, we
fuck.
Did not.
Okay.
It's the one round round.
The one round round.
So, all right.
One round round.
Been already.
Chris, your category is Lando Calrissian.
Sounded like Sean Connery for a second.
He did.
Chris.
All right. Now, here's my strategy. If I bet 1.
Strategy.
Everyone needs to sleep.
I know.
No more episodes after this recording.
If I bet 1 and I lose, still ahead of them. Am I right?
Yeah, well, so I haven't gone.
But if you bet 5 and you get it right,
you're way ahead.
You could jump out to
way ahead.
It would take us 2 more episodes to catch up to you.
You know, though, you know me. My memory sucks. All right, ready?
Who are you and why are you in my house?
I will bet
5.
What was the highest? 2 or 3?
5.
You bet.
Tim is -5. Matt has -3. You can bet 0
Matt,
to 5.
You bastard. I will bet 2.
Okay. Here's your question.
Okay, about
Lando.
What did Darth Vader threaten to leave behind on Cloud City if Lando didn't play along?
Your dick.
The rest of you will be in Coruscant.
What?
But did Darth Vader threaten to leave behind?
Leave behind?
On Cloud City if Lando didn't play along.
Cleveland Steamer.
On your chest.
The Emperor's Force suck.
I'm thinking this out.
Don't make me drop this inning.
Come on, I'm trying to think here, people. I leave behind because he said, you know, I'm going to bring... That's not the deal we made. But he was taking something. Not leaving shit behind.
But he might leave something behind.
If he didn't play along, whatever the quote was.
No, not actually.
I'm going to leave this 1982 Pinto behind. I don't want it anymore. Fixed it up, drive it, I don't care.
So leave something behind.
Yes.
Yes, behind.
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 I'm going to leave all my bad karma behind. Starting a new life.
You're really thinking.
Yeah, no idea. I'm saying Leia.
What?
I've done.
Don't make me leave that bitch behind.
You have to listen to her incessant whining.
No
idea.
No guess?
No guess.
Right now, about half of our listeners are screaming at their listening device saying, it's this!
Alright, what do you guys think? You have a guess of that? Guess out there? What is it?
Garrison.
A garrison. He's going to leave behind a garrison.
$10 million on the table. I would have never gotten that.
No?
No, seriously.
Alright, so far...
We're doing good.
0-3, -2, -3, -2. What's my category?
Your category is... Planets.
Planets.
I'm the apes.
I'm betting 5 points. I'm getting out to an early lead.
All righty. What planet is full of snow? No, that ain't it.
We all need to sleep so bad.
What planet did Luke...
Tim seems to be holding it together pretty good.
What planet did Luke leave after noting Han and Leia will die if I don't?
Dagobah.
Hollywood.
Spell it backwards.
No.
Dagobah.
No points till you spell it backwards.
5 points.
5 points it is.
Wow. Nice.
All right. So after one episode of The Imperial Pursuit Strikes Back.
Wow.
You won trivia before I got you under room magnets. That's right.
Yes, you did. They're on my fridge. Matt is at -3. Tim and Chris are at -2, and I am at +5.
That, you son of a bitch!
God damn you!
He damns you!
I do damn you.
That you're doing your danger voice, Tim.
I'm sorry.
That was actually a good impression.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for listening to this discussion about Piet. And once again, it's all thank Eric Moore for...
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Eric.
Join us next time when we discuss the Tauntaun.
The Hamburglar freezes to death in the Arctic. Rabble, rabble.
Thanks for listening to Star Wars in Character. Star Wars in Character is part of the NeoZaz.com network of podcasts. For more great podcasts and original entertainment, please visit www.neozaz.com. Star Wars in Character is not affiliated with nor endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox. Star Wars and all Star Wars universe characters, places, or Star Wars related items are the copyright of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. Visit www.swic.neozaz.com for the latest Star Wars in Character episodes and information.